It'll be a big dog.
The hour 10:15 have arrived. We'll call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. We will do the minutes from 2 days, but we will start with House File 2314. That's the bill we held over from yesterday. We have a few folks who would like to testify. So when we have a quorum, I will move House File 2314. And members, I do believe I have an amendment. I'll be moving the A1 amendment to get the bill in shape by like when we have a quorum. If Mr. Michael could briefly describe the bill.
Let's see, are we on the tax credit for prepared?
Yes, sir, okay. 2314.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House File 2314 with the author's amendment provides a non-refundable 20% tax credit for charitable donations of prepared food that's donated by businesses that are regularly in the business of selling prepared food. So essentially that would include and this is what the amendment does. The original bill was limited to restaurants, and the amendment expands it to other businesses that are in the business of selling prepared food. So that would include, for example, grocery stores and other entities that the original bill required 70% of their gross receipts to be from selling prepared food, whereas the amendment eliminates that and allows it to all businesses. So essentially this is donations of meals and similar amounts that they would get a tax credit, as opposed to the under current law where they get a deduction for those contributions. That deduction would be added back, so they would just get the 20% tax credit. And again, it's non-refundable with no carry forward.
Thank you. We do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of March 24th, 2016. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of March 29th. You weren't actually here. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of March 29th. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simonson. Item next. I will move House File 2314. I will now move the A1 amendment, and Mr. Michael described the bill as amended. Any further discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Okay, we have House File 2314 before us. It's been described. Is there anyone, Mr. McElroy, I believe, would like to make a few comments? Is there anyone else in the audience that wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns thereof? And there is a letter in the packet from the Minnesota Grocers Association members dated March 29th. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Restaurant Association and the Minnesota Lodging Association. Our associations have about 2,300 member locations in Minnesota, of whom we believe something over 300 currently have active programs for donating prepared food to charities that see that those foods are used to serve people who have need for them. Work closely with a variety of entities, including the Salvation Army and others. When I ask our members why they may not yet participate in prepared food donation, some of them because they're busy and have small staffs and haven't gotten to it. Others because there are some costs involved with those donations of additional storage space, of staff training, of containers in some cases, of transportation in some cases. And we applaud this bill, Mr. Chair, and its efforts to address that. We see it as a win for our restaurant and full-service hotel members, for the nonprofits who are the conduit for this prepared food, for the environment because we avoid waste and we avoid the energy use of cooking food twice or cooking food that's never used, and for the individuals and families who benefit from a nutritious meal. So we thank the members for their support of this bill and urge that it be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Mr. McElroy. Members, if you think about what this bill does as amended, this could help a lot of food shelves, could help a lot of people. I've always been very supportive of local food shelves, and I think this is a good thing to do. Mr. Michael, does this, with the amendment, does this include gas station food?
Mr. Chairman, one of the requirements of the bill is that if you look on page 7, lines 12 through 15, those are the requirements for the food that qualifies, and I'll leave it to the committee to decide whether or not that includes gas station food or not.
Mr. Chairman. Michael, I love gas station food. Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, as we discussed this with some of our members who, not so much gas stations, but limited service hotels, those types of food from companies like Deli Express or Supermoms or others are often heated and prepared early in the day, but there's rarely leftovers because they're very careful about not having too much left at the end of the day. So we don't think that's where the volume will come from. One of the big volume areas is weddings, where a wedding venue will prepare for whatever the guarantee was, plus 10%, and depending on how many people show up, there may be prepared meals left. Events at hotels create prepared food. Some restaurant menu items create prepared food that is available for donations. Short-order kinds of things or heat-to-order are less likely to result in donations, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Just a note for members here, to be clear, I have from House Fiscal here, the revenue estimate is on the base bill itself, not with the amendment. So we're not voting this out of here today, so we can get members some new numbers as soon as they're available. With that, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Erickson, representing QSR Plus, Quick Service Restaurant Plus, sometimes known as fast casual, sometimes known as fast food. Our members include Burger King, Taco Bell, Jimmy John's, Subway, Dairy Queen, and we represent, my client group represents some 177 locations in the state of Minnesota, all operated by franchisees. This bill was brought to us by Yum Brands, which is the national brand owner of Taco Bell. They are pursuing this in this state and in Arizona, California, Georgia, Kentucky, Massachusetts, New York, Texas, Washington, or West Virginia. So we'd appreciate you being the first in the state in the states to do this. I might add that, as you know, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest is your co-author in the Senate. The bill was heard in the Senate, very favorably reviewed, and laid over for possible inclusion in their bill. So we're here to support it. We think it's a good bill. I appreciate the chance every now and then to appear on behalf of a white hat bill, and that's what this is. So I'm here to support McElroy and the Restaurant Association and represent my group and stand for certainly any questions, but thank the committee and for considering it, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for carrying the bill.
Thank you very much. Did you say you represent Jimmy John's?
They are one of our members, yes,
sir. Freaky fast. Freaky fast. I love Jimmy John's. Okay. I love them all. I'm just feeling the love today. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I certainly agree with the thrust of the bill. I used to serve on a board, and we provided a number of services locally, including a food shelf. And we had some wholesale grocers that were willing to donate out in the western suburbs. And my question then is prepared food. As I read this, I'm not sure it's totally clear that, let's say, a wholesale grocer, if they donated some flour or sugar, obviously that would take some preparation. But what if they donated canned goods that simply had to be heated. Soup, for example, or cookies that you don't even have to heat. They're prepared to be consumed. And so I'm just kind of going at the definition after Mr. Michael pointed out those lines on page 7. If that would include, and I guess I said wholesale grocers because there were there was one in particular that was a big donor, but that could be grocery stores, you know, that are donating those same kinds of items to a local food shelf. Just wondering if they're covered.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I don't think that that's not intended to be covered because if you look at line 12 on page 7, it says food which is cooked or heated by the qualifying taxpayer. And in the case of making a donation of a you know, a bag of flour, that's not something that the grocer cooked or heated. Now, on the other hand, if the grocer baked the cookies and donated them, I suppose that might qualify because then they were, you know, then there are two or more mixed ingredients and they were, you know, baked. That's, I assume, means the same thing as cooked or heated. And so that probably would qualify in your example.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, and that's where I was trying to get a clarification. I understood that things like flour, sugar would require some mixing or cooking. They wouldn't qualify. But when I was on that board, a lot of donations were canned goods. And they would be mixed. They would simply require you to open the can and heat the soup or whatever the other basically what I would describe as prepared food. I don't remember if we got much frozen food, but they may even be at big freezers where we were storing the food, you know, for clients that would come in. So they may even have gotten some frozen prepared foods from grocery stores and some of the wholesalers. But I was just interested in some clarification because I like the direction of the bill. And really, it was those kinds of donations that helped immensely with the local food shelf that we were operating.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. The gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. my question just kind of goes, we talked a little bit about what you can do. This bill is obviously moving forward to try to encourage donations. How about from a liability standpoint, you know, whenever you're dealing with prepared food and the donation of it, you know, how does that process work out? Through the, obviously, that's not, you know, maybe above and beyond the tax committee here, but that was a question that I had and thought, since you're there.
Mr. McElroy? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons there's some cost involved is the necessary to maintain records that it was kept at temperature, chilled properly, kept in coolers, usually not donated hot, usually chilled for safe transportation. But our members potentially have liability and have insurance for that. There is some provision in the health code that if we follow all the rules in the Minnesota Food Code, we have some safe harbor, but we're liable potentially.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I might add that for my particular quick service restaurants, we are very cognizant of the liability issue, and we have procedures in place to make sure that the product we're donating is safe, healthy, not spoiled, and efficacious. So the point is well taken. We're willing to take that risk to help move the ball forward in terms of the donation that is being encouraged by this bill. And I might just say, you know, I've heard it alleged that if we did not throw away all the food in just the U.S. that gets thrown away, we'd feed the world. So this is a modest step to try and alleviate that and encourage food to be used if it isn't used in its first purpose. Thank you.
Gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question maybe would go to Mr. Michael, but looking at kind of the sales tax collection, you know, if you're dealing with prepared food from like a wedding or say you're preparing for 350 people and, you know, 300 showed up, you'd be potentially donating 75 meals. You know, if you're the end user, if you're the wedding party, you'd essentially have paid sales tax on the lot of 400-some meals. Is there some... I mean, have you guys looked at, as an organization, from a sales tax relief standpoint, that's saying, hey, if you do order that many meals and paying sales tax collection, but then because I know we had a bill, I think it was last year, looking at with restaurants and meals and sales tax on meals for potential employees and some of those things, and trying to work some of that out and how those two things would potentially jive together. Thank you.
Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, that is not a part of this bill. We have not looked at it. It is an interesting idea. If a family guarantees, or a purchaser guarantees, a certain number of meals, they're charged for that. If in order to avoid embarrassing a host, most meeting venues, wedding venues particularly, will prepare a little over that so they're protected if more people show up. There was no charge, sales tax charged on that portion of it. But there is on paid, guaranteed, not served. We're not proposing that be refunded, but it's an interesting idea, and we'll look at it. It's not something we've been asked about.
Most weddings I go to, if there's extra food, by the time I leave, there's not a whole lot left. Mr. Michael, I believe the gentleman from Lyon brings up a very good question, in that didn't we pass a couple years ago a provision, a kind of a Good Samaritan thing, where if you donate to food shelves, your liability is somewhat lessened?
Mr. Chairman, I think what you're referring to is conforming to the federal treatment of the donation of food, that there's a special, under normal circumstance, if you're in a business and you donate your inventory, your stock and trade, you get a deduction that's limited to the amount of your cost as opposed to the fair market value of the donation. There's a special federal rule that's been part of the expiring tax provisions that I know you carried a separate bill on to conform to that provision the last time around, which of course the legislature did. Congress now has made that provision permanent, and if your federal conformity bill were to pass, that provision then would become a permanent part of the Minnesota tax code.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative Chair Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman and others, I still remain in doubt about the ability when I read page 7 about prepared foods and so forth. I can see people, not any restaurant people that you represent, but people building up the their charitable deduction by what they're shipping out to, wherever they're shipping it out to. Frankly, I've seen a lot of stuff that I know is not marketable due to appearance, age, freshness, grade, size, surplus, or other conditions, and so forth, shuffled off to somewhere else where it can be eaten. And I don't know if that's, now we're going to give a charitable deduction for that. I don't know. I get a little queasy when I think of the stuff I've seen,
Mr. McElroy?
Mr. Chairman, I can't speak to what may happen in some areas. I know the organizations that my members work with, like Salvation Army or the National Food Connection, are very careful about the charities that they work with and the processes and procedures for it being used in a reputable manner. Those are the people who would apply for this credit. I'm not aware of the situations that Representative Earhart refers to. The liability for sending anywhere food that may not be safe and wholesome to eat is pretty high, and I know our members wouldn't do that. It isn't worth the risk.
Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, does this apply only to the restaurants that he represents, or does it apply to everybody across the state?
Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, it would apply to anyone who's licensed as a restaurant or under the amendment a food service operator. They're all subject to inspection by the U.S. or Minnesota Department of Health, some by local health inspection. The Minnesota Food Code speaks to not allowing food which isn't fit for human consumption to be served or passed along to where it would be served. I don't think this bill impacts whether some inappropriate practices may continue, but the bill does apply to anyone who qualifies under the terms of the bill.
Chair Earhart. Okay, and members, or maybe for Mr. Michael, on page 7.14, I don't know if we need to change the word or to and, because it says ingestion or chewing. Why would you ingest if you haven't chewed? I mean,
liquid smoothie,
soup.
Oh, smoothie. Okay, you wouldn't chew that. I hope teeth would be very sensitive. Okay, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a few different questions, and one of my questions was about an and, but a little higher up on line 7.13, where it's listing the criteria by which the food would need to qualify, and the word and is used. And I guess I'm just not sure if it would be appropriate to change it to the word or, because the first line of that section where it says food which is cooked or heated, would that exclude any, say, like a coleslaw or something where it's never heated? So I could see how that would make it problematic. And then wondering also if this would affect schools with the extra food that they have left over, because there's a lot of waste in schools, especially with the federal requirements that they provide certain portions. And then third question, how would the amendment affect the revenue note if we're broadening from restaurant to individual or entity? Sorry, that was a lot
Thank
of questions
you,
all in one.
Wills. By broadening, the amendment broadens the scope, so there would be more cost, and we will get those numbers as soon as we can. Mr. Michael, on 7.13, should the and be an or?
Mr. Chairman, it depends upon whether you want to have all of those requirements apply to anything that's going to be donated or not. If you don't, if you want to, I think Representative Wills makes a good point that if you want to allow food that has never been heated to qualify, you would need to make that an or. So that, I think that, you know, it's a policy question as to exactly what you want to qualify. I think the people who put the bill together are the restaurant people, and they do. All of the food they donate has been heated in some way. It's, you know, more than it's, yeah. So.
Okay. Representative Wills? Or Mr. McElroy?
We can work with the bill whichever way it passes. What I hear about is generally not coleslaw, but it is entrees or large volume side dishes. But we'll, I can understand the point, and Mr. Chair, we can work with it either way you choose to pass it.
Okay, thank you, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would recommend changing it to an or just to clear up any confusion in interpreting it by the entities that would qualify. But, you know, Mr. Chair, it's your bill, so it's your decision. And then wondering if we have an answer on how this would affect schools, if at all, because...
Well, I think Mr. McElroy's suggestion is good. Let's talk about this because you bring up a very good point here. If that's okay, we'll, as this thing gets discussed further. Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm disappointed that we don't have anyone from the receiving side here testifying because I've heard of challenges that they face. It's late in the day, you know, you're not going to sell as much as you cooked. All of a sudden you want to drive it down to the shelter downtown, and they don't have storage facilities, they don't have staff at that time of day to package it up or to put it, may not have space in a cooler, we'll have to, you know, heat up and then figure, you know, I mean, it can be a challenge for the receiver, depending upon their relationship, and, you know, this sort of implies, you know, that, and I'm wondering whether or not they're going to have some bookkeeping responsibilities. Typically when you donate something, you have to, you know, give a receipt that says what you received on what day, whatever. Typically restaurants run out of food late in the day, which is when they typically would have an overnight staff person with supervision, maybe a security person, but not people prepared to deal with taking in food. In the food shelves, I have heard from food shelves in my city that have had to incur increased costs because people are donating or businesses are donating produce that is, you know, maybe good stuff is mixed in with stuff that's going, or is certainly not the food that most people would pick on their own because of its size or its condition. And on line 7.10, you say that food may not be readily marketable due to appearance, age, freshness, grade, size, or other conditions. And, you know, this sort of implies that it's okay for people who are the working poor, who are stretching things by going to a food shelf, should just take, you know, something that's unattractive and about to expire. And they've actually, some of the food shelves have incurred significant composting charges if they're responsible. They compost rather than just have it hauled out as trash. And they have to have a lot of volunteer recruitment to just sort through the stuff and pull out the bad things and, you know, put the things that are in good condition out for the people who are receiving it. And so I'd really like to hear from the other side of this. I always support people supporting our food shelves and our soup kitchens, but we don't want to create more work for them just to give a tax break to someone who has some excess material. And, you know, maybe they have to have an advance written agreement before they, you know, that specifies the terms of the donation or something like that, so that they know that it will be delivered the next day, the next morning, when per an agreement or something like that.
Thank you. Mr. Erickson, to the law firm.
Mr. Chair, Representative, some of my clients are already participating in doing some of this without the incentive. What we want to do is encourage and cover some of their costs and encourage more people to do it. But it's a two-way street, Representative. We can't donate to someone that doesn't accept it. I mean, we don't go in and dump some product and then take a donation. It's in some cases, a contractual relationship. We're going to bring you this, and if you accept it, that's fine. So I think the protection to what you're concerned about, Representative, would be that the receiving party is doing that with its eyes wide open and getting value for what they're getting. And if they don't, they'd say no, and we wouldn't be entitled to the deduction. I think it's if not contractual, certainly a consensual two-way, two-party agreement that happens regularly. That's my understanding, and I think we would, if there are problems in that, we'd certainly work on it as in the future. And certainly, Representative, we can reach out to some of the folks that we do give money to now that can weigh in on your question. And I'll be happy to do that as the bill goes forward, Mr. Chair.
And I think Representative Loeffler brings up a very valid point, and I think what I'm going to do is I will reach out to Channel One, some of the food shelf folks, to see what they think of this bill, and I haven't at this point, but I will write that down so we don't forget. Please. Sounds so bossy. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because I think that the food shelves and the homeless shelters are in a precarious position because they're dependent upon charitable donations of cash, quite honestly, for their operations, which might come from these businesses. And so they tend to accept what comes and bear the burden, I think, not to create waves, I will just say. They're in a position where, you know, they're trying to do the best for people in their community who are struggling. And I don't know that they want to publicize that, how much they end up having to dispose of and compost, because they either don't feel it's safe or it hasn't been stored safely or wasn't delivered at the right temperature, or because it really is past the point that most people would feel it was comfortable food to serve their family.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I can somewhat speak to that too, because I think you're absolutely right, Representative Loeffler. There is some concerns and questions there. As a church administrator, we are one of the recipients of this type of a donation that has been done in the past, and it can create a problem. The option that we have is we always can turn down the donation, and sometimes we have to do that. But we get things like Little Caesars that does their pizzas on pretty much on demand. At the end of the day, sometimes they are left over, and they are sent to us for giving out with our WellCat pantry in which we give that out to individuals, and we do need to provide volunteers for that, but we know in advance that those things generally are occurring, and most of the time there is a relationship between organizations of that nature, and so I really do appreciate the ability for us to be able to get the food in the hands of people that want and need that extra food. And every once in a while there is some loss. A bread, for example, is one of those things that only lasts for so long, and so we try to give it out during the week, but at the end of the week it sometimes is not the proper place for that. But we accept that as part of our cost of maintaining our relationship with the people that need the food. And so for at least the churches, which are also one of the participants in this program, it's working fairly well at this point. In talking with food shelves, they sometimes do have to deny donations as well. And so I think that's a question that we have.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a comment. When you mentioned bread, it made me think of something that is an aside from what my real comment will be. But I still remember my brother got a job at a local grocery store. I won't name it because it still exists. He's a senior citizen now, so it's a long time ago. But my parents were products of the Depression, so he didn't waste food. And he came home and he had his new job at this grocery store. And part of his task was to clean the shelves of all the baked goods and burn them. They wouldn't even let the employees take a loaf of bread home or whatever. And my parents, they couldn't hardly believe it, you know, because products of the Depression, you just didn't waste anything, especially food. But what I was going to suggest, Mr. Chairman, the reason I really had my hand up was that very section. I had highlighted what two members have brought up there, even though the food may not be readily marketable and so on. I was going to suggest that the author of the bill, Mr. Chairman, might consider putting a period before the even though, and then just say prepared food means food that meets all qualifying and labeling standards imposed by federal, state, and local laws and regulations, period. I think that would get at the issue that Representative Earhart brought up, Representative Loeffler brought up, and that I had highlighted and was planning on bringing up. And I'm not going to propose it as an amendment unless the chair perceived it as a friendly suggestion.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe I'll, Mr. McElroy or Mr. Erickson, if you could comment, because I think Chair Carlson brings up a very good point that why did I put that in my bill where it says even though food may not be readily marketable due to appearance, age, freshness, grade, size, surplus, or other conditions, if it doesn't qualify for anything, why would we be giving that away?
Mr. Chairman, we'd have no objection to Representative Carlson's proposal. In fact, I think it is a good idea. We can only lawfully donate things that are that meet the food code and that meet the standards, and you cover that in the first part of the sentence. The reason it's in the bill that we provided is it was in a model act that's been considered in Minnesota, in other states. It's not unusual for Minnesota to do it a little better, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Carlson, what you're suggesting is on 7.9, a period after regulation.
And then remove the rest of that sentence. Would
okay,
be my
so
suggestion.
It'd be on 7.9, it'd be regulations, comma, and then you go down, delete everything to, but include and includes.
Yeah.
Mr. Michael?
That would make it workable, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Essentially, the amendment would be on page 7, line 9, delete even though the food may not, and then on delete line 10, and on line 11, delete conditions, comma.
No, I think that's a great idea. Chair
Carlson, I'll move the amendment.
Chair Carlson moves the amendment. We're aware of the amendment on 7.9, as Mr. Michael just stated. Any discussion? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Carlson. I think that's good. Very good. Okay. Other discussion or questions for Mr. Erickson or Mr. McElroy? With that, I will move that House File 2314 as amended be laid out for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. All fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. The last item for today is an issue. It's House File 2380. And what we're doing here is trying to save taxpayers a bit of money here in that if you remember back to the committee hearings and the floor debate, specifically the committee hearings right now, especially in commerce, the tax, I believe that time was 1.5%. We were told repeatedly that, because I asked the question myself, why in the bill does it go up to 3.5%? Because the numbers that were being projected certainly didn't, that certainly wasn't needed. Of course, as we know, it was the 1.5, I think, for 1 year, and then immediately went up to 3.5. Now, if staff could tell me, I want to make sure I'm being accurate in what I'm saying here. So what this bill does is this says that unless certain criteria are met, the rate would be 1.75%, which would save people that are through the exchange some funds. Maybe, Mr. Michael, could you please give a little more of an explanation what the bill does?
Mr. Chairman, I think you correctly stated that what, in effect, what the bill does is starting for calendar year 17, it essentially changes, it reduces the maximum amount of percentage of premiums that can be retained or collected at 3.5% unless various conditions are satisfied. In other words, the if unless the legislative auditor makes the certifications, then the retention is 1.75 rather than the maximum of 3.5, excuse me.
And members, just to be very clear, as you've been notified previously, this one, it's my intent to move two ways and means, so there would be a vote today. Now, there was no amendments on this one?
No.
Okay. So we have the bill before us. Is there anyone that would like to, first of all, before we go to member questions, is there anyone that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, then we'll go directly to questions. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that the motion should be to refer it to Health and Human Services Finance, which has the jurisdiction over the Minsure budget. And as the bill is defined, it would actually have some implications for the Health and Human Services budget and would actually change some of the operation responsibilities between Minsure and the Department of Human Services in ways that I think need to be vetted and will have implications. And I know you said to start out that you thought that you were trying to save some taxpayers some money. And actually, when the Minsure bill went through 14 committees or whatever, I think that's going to be the Joe Atkins legacy, is the bill that went through the most committees. But it was insisted that the public programs, Minsure is a gateway to two different parts of the market. For those of you who don't work in Health and Human Services, it's the gateway to public coverage through medical assistance and medical and Minnesota care, and private programs, insurance policies called in the lingo QHP, qualified health programs. And this deals with the funding of the administrative costs related to the QHPs, the private insurance. But it's in the current law right now that there needs to be a cast allocation of all the overall costs between the Department of Human Services and Minsure. And it was put in the law, actually, by your party to assure that there was no way that the private sector was subsidizing people on medical assistance or Minnesota care. And so it's in the statutes that there has to be this strict cost allocation, and the private policies only pay for things related to them, and the public costs are fully paid for by that side of the budget. So there's no cost shifting to people buying private insurance. And this bill, as I read it, would actually create a risk of the opposite happening, which is that the private side would not fully cover its costs because it's no longer based on a cost allocation, actual costs, it's a percent. And so because the private side might not be covering its full cost, it could actually transfer it to the public side, which I don't think was your intent, but I think that's the way it might work out.
Representative Loeffler, what you're saying is exactly correct on the bill we have before us, which is not the engrossed version. This is, so I apologize to members. We are getting it very quickly, so we'll want to take a look at the bill as amended previously. So with the amendment, I think it'll be pretty clear that it should go to Ways and Means. What you're saying is exactly right. I apologize to you. I apologize to the – I don't apologize. No. We have the wrong bill before us here, and so we're getting the correct bill, and I will want members to take a look at that. And that bill, we had looked at some of the exact things you're saying, and with the notice on the House research, delete everything amendment. There's no delete everything amendment because it's already on. In a previous committee. So we need to get the corrected version here, and then it'll be my intention to take a brief recess, come back in a bit here, and work off the first engrossment, right, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. So with that, I want members before, because since we're actually taking a vote on something here, which we usually don't do in taxes, I want every member to have that before them so we can have a full discussion. And there was, let me ask this question to folks that are in the audience. Is there anyone that wishes to discuss this from the public or from any agency regarding the first engrossment that we'll have before shortly? Okay. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, before we break, Mr. Chairman, could staff perhaps tell us what the total MNSURE budget is? And as you know, I had some discussion with you, Mr. Chairman, in the previous committee and raised a concern that if that bill passed, which it did pass out of committee and is referred to Ways and Means, there would be a $13 million fine imposed on MNSURE this year. And then with I'm assuming the next bill still is dealing with the reduction part of it. What I'd like to know is if staff could let us know maybe during the break what the total MNSURE budget is so we know how much they could be potentially reduced with the two bills combined. We know the one, we had a fiscal note on the one that was $13 million. We don't have any information here about what the fiscal impact other than what the percentages are, and I have no feel for what that means for their total budget, other than it appears that it cuts it in half, at least with the formula that's in the bill that was handed out.
And that's a very good point. And maybe just go one step further, as long as everybody's here right now, maybe if staff could describe the bill that will be the first engrossment. First to the Carlson question, what are the numbers? I think we have some number. Maybe we could get Ms. Templin up here, or Ms. Schell, or somebody. To the Carlson question.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. There is a pending fiscal note for this, for the DE2 version of the bill. That will not be available until next week, I believe. There is the fiscal analyst for human services here that does have a knowledge of the MNSURE budget. Mr. Chair, if it would be appropriate, we could have him come. Otherwise,
I think it would be. It would be. We want to get all the information we can out on the table. So,
and Mr.
Gentleman, Chair
for my
Carlson.
Question, a ballpark number, if Mr. Berg would have that, would be fine, being that there's not a fiscal note prepared.
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Human Services Finance Committee. I have from the MNSURE March 9th, 2016 board meeting, the approved 16 budget and proposed 17. Their total budget, all funds for 2017 revenue is $38 million. This bit of which $12.8 million is premium withhold. This bill in fiscal 17 would have an effect of reducing that revenue based on those numbers by about $3.5 million in 17, and then there's a greater loss in 18.
Chair Carlson.
And Mr. Chairman, and I just mentioned to members, I started thinking it over the break, that would not include if that $13 million fine became a became law that's now referred to Ways and Means. So you'd, in addition to the cuts then that Mr. Byrd just indicated, there would be that $13 million on top of that, which something to think about. I think we all know that there's been problems with MNsure, but we'd certainly be setting them up for failure with that kind of a budget reduction between the two bills, is my point. But thank you.
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the numbers I mentioned do not refer to the other bill you're referring to, so that would be a separate issue.
Yeah. Chair Carlson?
But Mr. Chairman, I understand that. I just want members to know that's a bill that was acted on favorably just within the last hour or so. It is now on its way to Ways and Means. The report will obviously be on the House floor the next time we meet, not today, but the following day, I assume.
Representative Loeffler and then Dabney. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're waiting for the language that should be before us, perhaps you can tell us what, if your intent is also to change the responsibilities of MNsure and DHS, because at least in the language before us, it does change that. I think it would actually require an MA plan revision to the federal government as well, because you're changing how we do enrollment renewals. We do not automatically renew anyone in public health programs. We require them to, once again, go through all the proofs that they are continue to be eligible. This bill mandates some major changes in how we would handle enrollment, renewal, verification, fraud prevention, all kinds of different things in the medical assistance and Minnesota Care program. And so the performance standards are a major change in how we currently enroll people in public programs. And is that your intent? Because then we should probably actually have the policy committee look at that.
Yeah, I believe we should be able to answer that from, as Mr. I guess we're not going to take a break here. Mr. Rubis is passing out the bill that we should be working on, which is the first engrossment of House File 2380. Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, maybe this is a question for Ms. Templin, but are we accounting for the costs to the OLA? This strikes me as an unusual use of that office, and I assume that that will cost. They'll need to attribute costs to that, and so I'm wondering, are we tracking that? Who tracks that? What budget handles the OLA? What committee oversees that budget? I could get some help maybe from Mr. Berg.
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, the numbers I mentioned do not include OLA costs. There is a pending fiscal note, as Ms. Templin mentioned. I don't know offhand if it's been assigned to the legislative auditor's office. It probably should have been. I'll check that after this hearing. But that would appear, if there are costs there, it would appear in the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Berg.
Mr. Michael, for the Dabney point.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Dabney, if you look at the engrossed bill, that essentially the function that was to be performed by the legislative auditor is now done by an independent third party. If you look on line 2.6, you won't find references to the auditor in this revised version.
Okay. Chair Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And members, we'll continue the discussion here. So I will move House File 2380, the one that it says first engrossment, HF 2380, first engrossment. We take the health, a lot of the health plan issues out of here, and we take the Office of Legislative Auditor out of here. So with that, we'll go to further questions from members. Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I'm looking at the right piece of goods here now, but there's one that says allows MNsure to retain up to 3.5% of total premiums. Is that what we're looking at now, and that's going to be reduced to 1.5?
Chair, I heard it would be 3.5 to the 1.75, which is still above what we were promised 4 years ago. Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, where does that 3.5 come out of? Commissions that otherwise would be paid to agents? Or?
Chair Earhart, no, that is just the fee that the client, the insured, has to pay. I don't know. You don't have a whole lot of agents doing this because they don't get paid much of anything. I think we've gone in Fillmore County, a county of about 20,000 wonderful people. I think there's one agent that doesn't insure now because they don't like eight-hour waits on the phone. They don't like, you know, they can't get through, and then they're told one thing, and then they're told another, and then people get put on MA. And, you know, the whole thing there, I don't know if we need to get into this more of a tax issue, but that would be the fee that is charged by MNsure to run operations. Representative Chair Earhart?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for getting us the updated language. It still does not address the issue that I'd raised, which is actually potentially shifting more of the cost of MNsure onto the Minnesota taxpayers through shifting costs onto the MA and Minnesota Care side of the operation. Right now we have in state law, in a different portion of state law than your bill address with, a requirement that there be a cost allocation system so that the private side pays for its share of the costs and the public side pays for its share of costs, and that there's no, that we don't ask people buying private insurance policies to subsidize the public. Your bill will do the opposite, I believe. It will shift the cost onto the public side, which will be Chair Dean's budget, because the costs of the website, which are now split based on what percent of enrollees are in which program, are still going to operate. The call center will still operate. You know, there'll still be shared costs that this would shift the allocation on. But it also, in the new language, it also does change how we process eligibility and verify eligibility for Minnesota Care and medical assistance. And that language is still on 2.1, on the provisions of the performance standards that you've established under 2.12 to 2.23. You have that MNsure shall automatically process renewals in public health care programs. We have a strong set of responsibilities to the federal government and to our state laws to re-verify that people are eligible. And, you know, your site has made much of an OLA report looking at to make sure that all those T's are dotted and we verify people's income, that we verify that their household composition hasn't changed, that their work status hasn't changed. We do not provide for automatic renewal. Number four is you have self-service functionality for changes in qualifying life events, including adding or removing household members, changes in address or income, canceling coverage, etc. All of that affects whether or not someone qualifies for the public side or the private side. And once again, we have fraud protection and eligibility verification issues that we would not, I don't think, under our federal MA plan be allowed to change. You could propose a waiver. I doubt the feds would allow you to lessen requirements for re-verification eligibility. And so this is a major change in the vision for who's responsible for what and who pays for what. And so respectfully, Mr. Chair, I would make a motion that we re-refer this to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee because of the policy provisions are perhaps even bigger than the finance issues, but both of them will impact Health and Human Services and how its statutes govern the responsibilities of DHS and MNsure. And those statutes are not addressed in this bill.
And thank you very much. We do have a motion before us, discussion to the motion. I would just say that I do not, because of we have the first engrossment here, some of those issues you're talking about are in the stricken language from that we had the amendment in Congress. I also see what you have here, but I really don't see where this is a cost shift. This just makes MNsure do their job, and if they don't meet the certain benchmark, I mean, we're getting them back to above where they promised they'd be 4 years ago. And so I don't see the cost shift here. But members, to the Loeffler motion. To the Loeffler motion. I would respectfully oppose it. I think this is ready for Ways and Means. Further discussion? All in favor say aye. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. We now have the House File 2380 before us. Any other questions or comments? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that it probably wasn't your intent to transfer money onto the public programs, but it doesn't address the current cost allocation requirements in other parts of the statute. And is it your intent that the private contribution be limited and that state taxpayers through the contribution from the Department of Human Services budget make up the difference?
I'm trying to keep them separate, Representative Loeffler, and I'd like to move this to Ways and Means. That's why we have the committee process, and I would like to set up a time to meet with you and some staff folks, because I don't think Chair Dean would be very happy with me if I was doing what you think I'm doing, but I don't think I'm doing it. I hope I'm not doing it, but we'll see if I'm doing it. So with that, any further discussion? And I do want to talk to you further, if that's okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do think people need to know that this would be changing to a much more streamlined system of eligibility for our public programs. It would get rid of the safeguards and re-verifications and proof of change in status that we currently require for people going on medical assistance in Minnesota Care, and I'm not sure that that's a direction that most people would support, and that it really does need to have a much more thoughtful approach if you're serious about this bill, and it needs to go to the Health and Human Services Committees where it can get that.
Okay. Thank you. Further discussion? Anyone from the audience wish to testify? I will move that House File 2380 be
amended.
No, this isn't amended. I can't pass anything
Sorry.
Anymore.
Gross.
I will move that House File 2380
First and gross.
Be shot over. What are we doing? We're
be
moving?
Referred.
Be referred. Be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you very much, members. Anything else for the good of the order? If not, we will be meeting tomorrow. Do we have an agenda for tomorrow?
No.
Okay. I'll look it up. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.